So, time to start. So, first of all, class photo is today, though there is very low attendance, so maybe, well, we'll see. I mean, there is this teaching large classes. If no new people will come during the hour, maybe we'll postpone it to Friday. And also, I hope to return homework one, and also, I hope to continue with this futile task of defining invariants that are not invariant, EK invariant, and then fixing them so that they become invariants in some sense with values in Z mod Z. But again, it's not really futile. It's just that, you know, it looks futile at the beginning. But anyway, so let me remind you where we were. Given a curve, a knot gamma, or more precisely, a knot is an equivalence class, so an embedding of a circle in R3, gamma, I've defined eta of gamma to be 1 over 4 pi, but I think 1 over 4 pi was a mistake, times a certain integral of a pullback of omega. So omega is the volume form on S2. If you normalize it so that the total volume of S2 is 1, you don't need the 1 over 4 pi. If you take the volume form sort of induced by the metric, then you need to divide by 4 pi. So I guess I got confused. So no 1 over 4 pi, but it's the integral over the configuration space of two points in S1. So you put two points x and y on the circle of the pullback via phi. Phi is the usual direction of U map going from x to y. It's a mapping to S2, so you pull back the volume form of S2. You integrate it on the configuration space. You realize that a priori it doesn't even make sense because it's an integral over a non-compact space. So first thing you need to do is to compactify it. To compactify it, we will repeat this story again and again later, by the way. I mean, so to compactify it, first of all, you write it as the set of all x and y different from each other in S1, and then you reparameterize it as x is anywhere in S1, in x1, on S1, and then rather than writing y, you think of z, which is the difference between x and y, and it's something in the open interval from 0 to 1, and the compactification is c2 tilde, which you get by replacing this open interval by a closed interval. So now y can lie on top of x, but it can lie on top of x in two different ways, either as x plus 0 or as x plus 1, which you may as well call x minus 0. So it's either like x plus 0, which is y approaching to x from the right, or x minus 0, which is y approaching to x from the left. Now, this map phi, the direction of u, extends to the compactification either by mapping sort of the two diagonal, the x plus 0 diagonal to gamma dot, to the tangent, and the x minus x0, sorry, the x comma x minus 0 diagonal to minus the tangent. Okay? So at any rate, phi extend to this compact space, and therefore you can make sense of this definition. Then you do the same Stokes theorem game as before to check if this is an invariant, and it isn't. And the reason it isn't an invariant is that essentially to get degrees to be invariant, or to get integrals such as this to be invariant, they need to be on spaces with no boundary. However, this has a boundary. Therefore, it isn't an invariant. So we want to somehow replace C2 tilde by something that doesn't have a boundary. And a priori, we don't know how to do it. And I'll show you two ways of doing it, and both ways will sort of succeed in some sense and fail in another. Okay? So the first way, which we already discussed, was to choose a, well, I don't think I gave the name before. So the name that Daniel Moskovich uses in a paper that he wrote on this subject is a swaddling map. And that's what I'll choose too. So to swaddle, I think, is to wrap a baby with sort of blanket, whatever. Well, I don't know. So a swaddling map will be a map from the disk to S2, so that the boundary of the disk is mapped to gamma dot. So, okay, we have the Gauss map. It's a curve on S2. And we find the disk whose boundary is that curve. And then, given a swaddling map beta, we can extend the map phi to something which I will call phi beta, which still has values in S2, and whose domain is now also S2. So basically, take a cylinder. Well, the cylinder is just C2 tilde. So the cylinder is C2 tilde. And let phi beta on the cylinder be just the old phi. But then glue to it a copy of beta on the top, so glue to the cylinder a disk at the top, and define phi beta on that disk to be to be beta, okay? And then since phi on the boundary of configuration space was gamma dot, and since beta on the boundary of this disk is also gamma dot, this matches. Likewise, do the opposite at the bottom. So use the same beta, except you need to, well, first of all, look at negative beta, because on the lower boundary, the value of phi is negative gamma dot. And second, I suppose I could write that really I'm using beta conjugate, because for each point here, I first have to look at the point right above it to see what beta does, and then negate it. So that's the conjugate here, okay? Anyway, that defines phi beta, and then we can define self-linking version 1 of a curve gamma, but now it's not an invariant of curves anymore, but it's an invariant of pairs, a curve and a swaddling map. So we define SL1 of gamma and beta to be the degree of phi beta, which is the usual pullback integral, and it's a number in the integers, because it's a degree, okay? Now, beta looks as complicated as gamma, potentially, okay? But bear in mind that beta, well, the only constraint on beta is that on the boundary of D2, it will be gamma dot. Beta somehow doesn't care about how gamma is noted. It only cares about gamma as an immersion. Right, an immersion is a map that has a well, an immersion of S1 in R3 is a map that has a derivative, a tangent defined at all places. So it only cares about gamma as an immersion, not as a knot. To the extent that this would be a knot invariant, it will depend only on the gamma part. Okay. Anyway, then we computed SL1 on one example. And the one example was the unknotted circle. Well, the unknotted circle, the Gauss map is just the equator. And so we could choose beta to be just the upper hemisphere itself, the identity map of the upper hemisphere to itself. And then the corresponding phi beta will be doing nothing. This whole thing will contract to the identity, well, this whole cylinder will be mapped to the equator, so it will not matter for degree computations. We will have beta at the top, the opposite of beta at the bottom. So overall, this will be a map from S, the identity map from S2 to S2, so SL1 is 1. This is the review. Are we done? Good. So now I want to state two claims that more or less, well, I mean, just two further claims. So claim one, SL1 of gamma and beta is an odd integer, always. So, proof. So, basically take an arbitrary knot, okay, and and an arbitrary swaddling map. Okay? Now, when you deform the knot, it makes sense to correspondingly deform beta. So, well, the Gauss curve will move on R3, and at least when it's a small deformation, it's clear how to follow with beta. At least it's clear up to homotopy. So I can deform this, and sorry, and furthermore, I can even deform this while going through crossings, while flipping crossings. Now, so it makes sense to deform the knot gamma to flip crossings. You know what? No, sorry. Let me say it differently. First thing, let's flip crossings while following with beta until gamma is a projection of the unknown. This is always possible, by the way. I mean, I'm not sure if I've said it already. Did I? But you can always flip crossings until you get a projection of the unknown, by just by turning the knot to be descending. So descending means that you choose a point, and you so a descending knot is a knot where if you choose a where you can choose a point, so that as you go from that point on, you will always be going down. Okay, until you reach that point again, and I suppose then you have to vertically go up again. A descending knot is always trivial because, you know, viewed from the side, it looks like a ski slope, something like that. Okay, with a lift at some point. Okay? So you can always basically pull everything out straight, pull it to be something like that. Okay? So by flipping crossings, we can make the knot descending. We can follow with beta as we flip crossings. And every time we flip a crossing, the beta part of the integral will not change. We'll make the flips extremely small, so beta moves only a tiny bit. However, the C2 tilde part will change by 2. You can check it. Basically because the crossing change, any crossing change, if x is here and y is here, will change, will switch from, the view from x to y is the upper hemisphere, to the view from x, after the crossing change, the view will be the lower hemisphere, so that's a change of 1. But we're integrating over the entire configuration space, so x could have been here and y could have been here. So that's a so basically, every time you flip a crossing, there are two places in C2 tilde in which the integral changes dramatically by a unit. So overall, every time you flip a crossing, you get a change of 2. Okay? And then you get to the R-naught. Now you can deform it to really look like the R-naught. Once it really looks like the R-naught, you've come to SL1 of an R-naught with some weird swaddling map beta, and the difference between it and what we started from is an element of 2z. Okay? The next thing you do is you change beta. And for this you have to use the homework assignment that I assigned last time. So you have to remember how beta may change. Well, I cannot tell you, but beta can change by sort of essentially 1 unit each time, but since beta appears twice in the construction, it will mean again an even change to SL1 of the circulant beta. And then you can modify beta to become the standard cap, and you come to 1. So at the end you only change the result by an even number and it comes to be 1. Sorry. So the result is an odd integer. Okay. And claim number 2, I think claim number 2 is included in claim number, in my proof of claim number 1. So as a function of gamma alone, so if you want to think of it as an invariant of a knot rather than a knot along with a swaddling map, then SL1 is defined up to an even integer. Well, that's what I've already showed, that or already is essentially less or less a homework. Okay? The dependence, so changing beta changes the result by an even integer. So we got an odd integer defined up to an even integer, which is essentially an empty result, but again, later we will use it. Okay, sorry. And here's a second definition. A second way of fixing eta to be what appears to be a meaningful invariant, at least for a second. Okay? So definition a framing of an immersion. So I mean, I will mostly use the word framing for knots, but it makes sense for an immersion, for an arbitrary immersion. So again, an immersion is just a map that always has a tangent. So a framing of an immersion gamma going from S1 to R3 is a choice of a vector nu, which depends on the point. So basically, for every point along S1, I choose a vector nu. So nu is a map from S1, and I want it to be never vanishing. And if it's never vanishing, I may as well renormalize it to have unit norm. So it's a choice of nu from S1 to S2,
which is always perpendicular to the tangent vector. So such that for any s, nu of s is perpendicular to gamma dot of s. So for every s in the circle. And I want this choice only up to homotopy. Up to homotopy. So in other words, I consider two such nus as being the same if you can homotop one to the other within the space of such nus. In other words, if you take this nu and sort of deform it, spin it around the knot, it's the same nu. Okay? So a few words before we go on. So first of all, what's the origin of the word? So a frame is like a reference frame in physics. So it's a choice of a coordinate system, or a choice of a coordinate system at any point. So a choice of a which is the x direction, which is the y direction, which is the z direction. A choice, okay? So strictly speaking, nu isn't a framing. It's not a choice of a coordinate system at any point. But you see, if you start with gamma dot and add to it nu, and then add to it the cross product of the two, meaning the vector perpendicular to both of them, then you get a frame at each point. So it's so hence the name framing. And comment number two, this is essentially the same as instead of thinking of the knot as being a kind of dimension zero, sorry, dimension one line, you think of it as being a thin ribbon. Okay? Because a ribbon is the same as a ribbon is defined by, well, one of its side along with the vector pointing in the direction of the other side, and that vector is nu. So in some sense, we are switching from studying knots to studying, from studying knottings of circles to studying knottings of thin ribbons, which is more or less the same. Okay, more comments. So claim I want to say that the framings of a given curve correspond to the integers. So I want to say that there are z many framings of a given curve. Okay? But the correspondence is not canonical. There isn't a canonical zero. Okay? At least a priori, there isn't a canonical zero. Okay? However, what I really mean is that if you fix one framing and call it the zero framing, all other framings are obtained by the action of an integer on the original framing. So once you fix one framing, to specify any other framing, you just need an integer. Or said differently, I want to say that given two framings, there is an integer which somehow measures the difference between them. Okay? So the difference between any
to framings is an integer. So I'll restate it in a more formal way in a minute. But anyway, why? So you have your vector, well, you have your two framings. So you have two normal vectors to the curve at any point. So you have nu1 and nu2. Okay? To go from nu1 to nu2, you need to rotate by a certain angle theta. Theta is defined only up to 2 pi. Okay? So, in some sense, the difference of nu1 and nu2 is characterized by a map theta, which goes from S1 to the set of all angles, which in itself is S1. So you can consider the degree of this theta, or alternatively, the class of the of theta as an element in the fundamental group of S1. So let's call it the degree of theta, and this belongs to Z. Okay? And now, more formally, let's reformulate the claim more formally. So the claim says, so more precisely, given two framings, I can produce an integer, and furthermore, once you fix one of the two framings, it's a bijection on the other two. Oh, sorry, on the other one. So furthermore, if nu2 is fixed, then the map nu1 into the degree of this theta, which measures the difference of nu1 minus nu2, is a bijection. Okay. More claims about framings even before we relate it to knot theory. So, okay, maybe... let's relate it to knot theory first. So, definition. So, the idea is... over here, in order to do the integral, we needed to look at the direction vector going from any point to any other point. And the issue, the problem, was what happens when these two points come close to each other. When the two points come close to each other, there is a singularity, because in defining the direction, we have to divide by the norm, which goes to infinity. Which goes to zero, sorry. Okay? So we do what the physicists will call point splitting regularization, which just means that, you know, if you have a difference in the denominator, then instead of letting it go to zero, you bound it away from zero. You split the two points that make the difference. So we consider our framing. The framing defines a shadow knot, the tips of the arrows. So we have a shadow knot going around our original knot. And then, instead of the direction vector from the original knot to the from a point on the original knot to the point on the original knot,
we look at the direction vector from a point on the original knot to the point of the shadow knot. If we are away from the diagonal, it makes no difference. Because, well, this could be chosen to be as small as you wish. Okay? But it fixes the issues near the diagonal. So in other words, I want to define SL definition number 2 of a knot gamma, but now it will depend also on a framing nu. So I will define it to be the old linking number. I mean, after all, doing this just reproduces the definition of the linking number of the knot gamma with the knot which I will call gamma plus nu, where gamma plus nu is by definition gamma plus epsilon times nu for some small epsilon, and it's clear that it doesn't, that once epsilon is small enough, it doesn't matter which one you choose. Okay, because you're just deforming the second knot, the second component. Okay. Good. So, a few examples. So, examples. So, well, let's start with the most obvious. So, let's take a knot with the framing where the normal is always the outward pointing normal in the plane. So, in other words, the shadow goes around like this, and well, sorry, this is SL2. Okay, so well, the result is the linking number of the full line with the dotted line, and it's clearly zero. Okay, by the way, this framing is the so-called blackboard framing, and what it means is that you draw your knot on the blackboard, and then, well, it only makes sense once you have a blackboard. It doesn't make sense as an abstract thing in R3. Okay. So, and once you draw on the blackboard, you take the shadow, which is always to the right. Okay? So this is the blackboard framing. Okay? And alternatively, well, I could rotate by 180 degrees, and I could do it uniformly along the whole knot, and then it would be the shadow will always be on the left. Alternatively, I could have rotated by only 90 degrees, and then the shadow will be always above or always below, which will amount to say that I'm constructing the knot using a ribbon where the ribbon is always vertical. Okay? Using a band where the band is always vertical. So anyway, that I suppose will be example number 2. What is SL2 of the trefoil using the blackboard framing? So, answer, it's in fact the rise of the trefoil. Because, what do we need to compute? We need to compute the linking number of dotted with full. So we need to
count the crossings of dottings of dotted with full, there will be a crossing of dotted with full. And in fact, there will be two crossings of dotted with full at every original crossing of the knot. But in the definition of the linking number, we had a 1/2. In the definition of the Rice, we didn't have the 1/2. So we just have one count for each crossing of the original knot, and the signs match. Okay? So for the trefoil, it will be 3. Okay? Now, example number 3, so it's not quite an example of a calculation, it's more a definition. So if gamma is a knot in R3, then it actually does have a canonical framing. Then it has a so-called zero framing, which is the framing nu for which SL2 of gamma and nu is equal to 0. But I want to emphasize that there is something not canonical about this construction. First of all, you need to look globally at the knot in order to choose the framing. Okay, where the framing is a local property. Secondly, well, I said a knot in R3 and both words are loaded. The notion of a framing makes sense for an immersion, but the notion of the zero framing makes sense only if it's a knot. Okay? There is no zero framing once you have self-intersections, because the self-linking number, or this whole definition, does not make sense if you have self-intersections. And finally, well, we didn't talk about anything that happens outside of R3, but framing obviously makes sense in an arbitrary 3 manifold. You can always look at normals. But in an arbitrary 3 manifold, you will not know how to define linking numbers in general. So in several senses, it's a bit of an artificial definition, this zero framing. Nevertheless, what is the zero framing of the trefoil knot? So the zero framing will be, well, it's not the blackboard framing, because the blackboard framing will have self-linking 3. So what I'll do is I'll start with the blackboard framing, and then I'll fix it to have linking number of 0 with the original knot. So I'll start with the blackboard framing, and mostly I will be using the blackboard framing. But if I continue using the blackboard framing, I will be off by a factor of by a 3. Okay? But I want to fix it, so I'll add 3 negative twists of the framing around the knot. So I'll go down, down, and down, and back. Okay? I hope this is negative. Yes, it is. Okay. Good. Oh, and another aside before we... Actually, let me put it on the same blackboard. So, aside, so the set of framed immersions of
S1 into R3 modulo homotopies of such is equivalent to the set SO3, the rotation group of pi 1 of SO3. Is equivalent to pi 1 of SO3. Maybe I should have here, you know what, let me change it so and make it long immersions from R to R3. So these are pictures that instead of embedding S1 to R3, I'll embed R into R3, but insisting that negative infinity will be fixed and plus infinity will be fixed. So negative infinity will be going to negative infinity and plus infinity will be going to plus infinity. Why? So basically, if you have a framed immersion, then at any point you have a frame. A frame is an element of SO3. So you have a path in SO3. It's a path that begins at some base point, begins in some fixed place, and ends in some fixed place. So it's a base path. And finally, and likewise, if you have a path in SO3, so a path in SO3 is a motion of a frame. In particular, you can look at the first vector in that frame, and it's a choice of a, it's a path in the space of direction vectors. You can always integrate it to become a loop, sorry, not a loop, a path in R3. And it's not going to go from minus infinity to infinity, but you can connect it to minus infinity and infinity by adding straight lines. And since I only insisted that it will be an immersion, it makes sense. It's well defined. Okay? So I've established the bijection. Now, under this bijection, here is an element of SO3, so this becomes an element of SO3 whose square, sorry, of pi 1 of SO3, of pi 1 of SO3, okay, whose square is trivial. So, indeed, if you do this element twice, so let's do it twice. Well, as an immersion, this is I could deform it to flipping this crossing within the space of immersions. That's fine. And over here, you can now take this bottom piece and kind of fold it out, and you will get a straight line. So that's not quite a proof that pi 1 of SO3 is Z2, but it's related to the fact that pi 1 of SO3 is equal to Z mod 2. In other words, we found an element which appears non-trivial and whose square is trivial. Okay? Good. More comments. So, how good is SL2 as an invariant of knots? So, SL2 of gamma and a framing nu is an integer, okay, because it's a linking number, which is an integer. Now, it can be any integer, it's not restricted to be an odd integer, because I can always change the framing by one unit, and then, meaning, let the normal spin around once more, and then that will change the self-linking number by one unit. But I've just told you that it's an integer defined as a, sorry, defined as a function of the not alone, of gamma alone, only up to an integer. So it's a fully legitimate invariant of framed knots, but as an invariant of unframed knots, it's defined up to an integer, meaning it's empty. Okay? Now, I have to consult with you. My alarm clock told me that it's time to take the class photo. Should we do it now or wait for Friday? Let's wait for Friday. There are several people that I know have not quit the class but did not come today. Okay, okay, so I still have more comments. It's all sort of little comments, but I want to make all of them. So, so, okay, we had SL2 and of a knot and the framing, and this is, by the way, the Greek letter nu. And I want to compare it with my original eta. So we said they were close, and in fact, away from the diagonal, they were the same. So, what's the difference? Okay? So, what is this? It's a certain integral. Well, I will not write it precisely, but I will say it's a certain integral along the knot, and, well, it's a difference of double integrals, but except on the diagonal, the two integrals are the same. So, when epsilon is small, when you choose the deformation here to be by a small amount, so the only contribution to the difference will come from from integrating over a point x, and the thing you would integrate is the difference between the point y being on the knot. Either right before, sorry, how should I say that? Well, let's write it in the following way. Let's write the framing like that, okay? And then there will be no contribution to the difference coming from the dotted line approaching the full line away from x. So the only contribution will be from y running around a semicircle around x, where the direction of the semicircle is determined by the framing. So if I will call this little curve over here, I don't know, what should I call it? The bypass of x by an amount delta, then the result will be the limit as delta goes to zero of the integral over S1 of x of the integral along this little curve, the bypass of x in the direction delta of some pullback of omega, and I'll have to write explicitly what it is. But the point is that this can be computed explicitly. So this is a local quantity, so you can compute it explicitly in terms of gamma and nu and their derivatives, meaning the tangents, at the point x. So a local quantity depending on gamma and nu, maybe their derivatives, and their derivatives at the point x. So now, what this quantity is depends on which framing you choose. And I want to state two examples, and I'm out of time, so I'll state only one. So if you choose the framing to be the second derivative of gamma divided by its norm. So you see, if you have a space curve, then it has a normal, the canonical, the Frenesseret normal, if you've seen differential geometry. Okay? So now it's defined only if the curve, only if the second derivative is non-zero, otherwise you cannot define, you cannot divide. So if the curve is a straight line for a segment, then this is not well defined. But if it's a sort of generic curve, then it's going to curve everywhere, and then it will have a canonical normal. And then, in that case, the local quantity, I don't know, let's call this local quantity lambda, then in that case, lambda is the Frenesseret torsion tau. And I think that's all I will say right now. So in some sense, this difference is the integral of the torsion of the curve, not in some sense, and this difference is precisely the integral of the torsion of a curve along the curve, if the torsion always makes sense. So I think I'll stop here.